Long days and pleasant nights, fellow explorers. I'm here to do the Norse Q&A because I like to finish every series that I do with at least about an hour of questions and answers submitted by viewers. The Q&A is really sort of allow me to figure out exactly how much I know about the series, about the topic, as well as fill in some gaps that maybe didn't get answered during the series itself. So the Norse mythology series was pretty short, among my shortest, I guess, or the shortest so far. And before I started the series, I knew absolutely nothing about Norse mythology. My only knowledge came from Marvel, came from Chris Hemsworth. So going into Norse mythology, I was a little concerned. I was a little worried. I was entering into sort of this, it was my first real mythology, my first real world mythology. You know, this wasn't just like a video game or some just fictional books. This was people's beliefs and culture that I was starting to explore. So I was very worried that I was going to not know what to do. I was going to mess up a lot. I was going to do all sorts of mistakes. And certainly I have made mistakes. But I think I put out a pretty decently set introductory series to Norse mythology. And it was actually very entertaining for me to do. I got to learn quite a bit about this very, very interesting mythology. And so now, since I've, you know, delved into it, I've delved into, you know, the books and things like that, and learned all these references and things like that, it's really been a lot of fun, because now, going back to, like, the Final Fantasy series, or the new God of War, you know, it allows me to make all these connections and realize all these references that have been made to the Norse mythology, and now I understand them. So that's very cool. The Exploring series is as much for fans and for viewers as it is for me. You know, I've gotten to learn so many things doing this channel, working on this channel. So Norse mythology, I would probably say is the series that I knew the least about going into it. So we'll see exactly, you know, how well my knowledge has been brought in by my research, by my readings. But all right, let's get to the Q&A. Like I said, it's going to be about an hour, give or take, or until I run out of good questions. So I'm just going from the top down, and we'll see how it goes. All right, so first up from Trip, what's your opinion on the differences between gods and Jotun? It's never really spelled out anywhere, and there are lots of similarities. Yeah. So if you're interested in Norse mythology and you're interested in watching videos about Norse mythology, which I assume you are, go check out Jackson Crawford's channel, Dr. Jackson Crawford. He's got a slew of videos. He's highly, highly educated and informed on the entirety of Norse mythology and Scandinavian languages and culture and stuff like that. Very interesting stuff. And so he basically says that the Jotnar, the Jotuns, the giants, they are not really meant to be a different species, you know, a different type of creature than the Aesir gods. It's not the way Marvel represents it. They're not meant to be giant blue men or anything like that. They're really just a separate family of individual, of these types of entities. Much like the Vanir gods of Vanaheim, or Vanaheim, are just a sort of different tribe or different family than the Aesir gods. So you can think of them as just sort of different families of the same type of entity. What that exactly entity, you know, what they are, whether they're, you know, deities or just sort of these just old creatures that are not, they're basically, they're not human. none of them are human. That's really the important distinction. Because among the Aesir, among the Vanir, among the Jotnar, their abilities, their appearance, their culture, their habit, you know, all that can vary wildly. And so that's really the thing that most popular culture gets wrong, is especially because of the term giants and the term frost giants. You know, that's really painted a picture throughout popular culture of separating the Jotnar from the gods of Asgard. So, you know, because the Jotnar and the Aesir gods are, of course, opposed. They are, you know, Thor continually battles Jotnar, and they built walls to protect themselves from the giants. But that doesn't mean there's also not a lot of intermingling between the gods and the Jotnar. Even, you know, at the beginning of time, Odin himself was the product of one of these Aesir and one of the Jotun. So, yeah, there are a lot of similarities because they essentially came from the same place. It's just sort of this class difference and this separation of this physical separation, as well as you know, just the way it's just like, you know, human civilization. You know, we're all the same, but there's so many, you know, different families, different tribes, different cultures, things like that that just separate them completely. I'm sure there's going to be more questions about the Jotnar and things like that, so I'll go into that further. But yeah, they are not as different as popular culture wants you to think. The OK Channel asks, are you excited for God of War 4? Yes. So God of War 4 is already, or God of War, is already out by the time I'm recording this, by the time you're seeing this. I have been playing it extensively. I've been having a lot of fun with it. And more importantly, I am planning to do a video showcasing all the references and connections between Norse mythology and God of War. More specifically, showing what God of War represents a character, event, location, scenario to be, and what we actually know of Norse mythology and the difference between the two. Because from what I've played so far, God of War does change a lot of things, and that's to be expected. Because you're trying to showcase this violent, action-packed story. You know, the primary focus of the Exploring series is to educate. And so already I've gotten people coming on the Norse mythology videos, specifically the Odin one, saying that I'm here from God of War, you know, anyone else here from God of War, and that's awesome, because that means people are playing the game and they want to educate themselves further, or they want to know more, at the very least, about these figures that are in the game. And so, well, I think that's awesome. I also don't want people to think what God of War is showcasing, you know, how God of War represents Odin, Thor, Balder, you know, all these characters and things like that. I don't want people to think that's what Norse mythology is. Now, you might say that's probably not possible because of how different it is and how out there it is, but there are people that think the Marvel version is also what Norse mythology is as well. So there are plenty of people that have done, you know, the differences between Marvel and actual Norse mythology, but since God of War is very relevant right now, it's a very hot topic. And I myself am a big fan of it, I would like to do a video on that. And I think other people would appreciate it as well. Damon X asks, who's your favorite monster from the Norse mythology? I would probably pick... Well, okay. It's a bit of a split, I guess. I like Jormungandr just for the concept of the Midgard serpent. And again, going back to God of War, the representation of Jormungandr in that game is just fantastic. Just for the coolness factor, really, of this serpent that's large enough to wrap itself around the world, or around Midgard at the very least. Just that's something very primordially scary and terrifying, but also very cool. But as far as actual characterization, since we don't know much about the Midgard serpent, Fenrir, who actually seems to have a personality, and we know a little bit about it. Fenrir is one of the most tragic characters within Norse mythology, and also wolves are cool. So yeah, it's a bit of a split between Jormungandr and Fenrir. And speaking of them, FB Guy asks, did Loki ever show that he loved or even cared about his children? Not that I know of. Generally, anytime that Loki's children are referenced in connection to Loki, it's as an insult. This is generally the other god's main form of insult against Loki, is mentioning his children. Even, you know, like Odin calls him the wolf's father, and they mention specifically a lot in Lokasenna, which is when, you know, Loki gets really drunk and just insults every other god, which is a fun time. A lot of the retorts against Loki mention his children, and so he doesn't really defend his children at all. He just sort of acknowledges that they exist, and that the prophecies are not exactly positive. If I can specifically... they insult him by saying that he is... this is specifically from the Prose Edda, or the Poetic Edda, I'm sorry, as translated by Jackson Crawford. Njorth says, it's a surprise to hear such a sissy god talking here when he's born children. So the fact that Loki actually gave birth himself is used as an insult. Tyr tells him that your son isn't doing well either. He remains forever in chains waiting for Ragnarok. I see that wolf sitting and drooling till Ragnarok comes, and you'll be the next one chained up, you evildoer. Generally, it's just used as insults, and Loki does not come to his children's defense. And really, you know, Loki is never really painted as that good of a guy. There are some exceptions, but, you know, like, his wife is barely mentioned. And you know, he went off to visit some Jotun maiden, and had, you know, multiple children with her, but then he also had some Aesir children with another goddess, and so, Loki does not seem to ever care that much about too many other people, including his family, as far as I know. Bugsy Squidwielder asks, what are your thoughts on Marvel's interpretation of Norse mythology? Well, it's a very fun interpretation of Norse mythology. It's taking, you know, elements of Norse mythology and just sort of slamming it into this existing cosmology of the Marvel universe that is very supernatural, very, you know, exciting, action-packed, very science fiction. And, you know, the problem with almost any adaptation of Norse mythology, and why you don't see a huge amount of it, is that just the mythology itself is very fragmented. We don't know a lot about it, and so that's both a blessing and a curse, because it allows you to... It's basically a canvas, you know, that allows you to fill it in with all sorts of additions and changes and things like that, as again the recent God of War has shown. You can't really just make a straight adaptation of what we know of Norse mythology. For one, there's just not enough content. And two, it's not always incredibly sensible, especially to our current culture and our current understanding of culture. There are some very strange things in Norse mythology, and that's part of what makes it fascinating. But you're trying to make, you're gonna make like a series of comic books. Yes, you could make a series of comic books that are just an adaptation of this, but fitting it into the Marvel universe is, with sort of grandiose plans, they had to do something far more interesting, or not interesting, but far different. So the whole advanced technology sort of sci-fi angle that it goes on, that's questionable, I guess. I mean, I must admit, okay, I've not read exactly that many Thor comics or anything like that. Like I said, most of my knowledge comes from like the films, which admittedly are just a very small part of it. It's a thing of like, if the Marvel version of Norse mythology, of Asgard, of Thor and Odin, if that has interested anybody in learning more about Norse mythology, then that's great. Just like the Lord of the Rings movies or the Hobbit movies. If the Hobbit movies interested anybody in reading the Hobbit, that's great. But on the flip side, if the Thor comics, the Thor movies have caused anybody to just be like, I don't need to learn anything about Norse mythology, I've learned it all from the movies, then that's not so great. And so it's sort of a tricky situation with adaptations. I think they've done well for themselves. But the problem is they tend to sort of, I don't even know the term for it really, but everything becomes a little bit nicer, a little bit sweeter. Odin especially, Odin in the Thor movies, at the very least, Anthony Hopkins just comes off as sort of this very grandpa character. He's like the Mr. Feeny of Asgard, and he's just generally very likable and wizardly, really, but in like a Dumbledore way. Whereas from actual Norse mythology, you miss out on that whole the slyer side of him, the side that's willing to do some underhanded things to get what he wants. Not exactly the gleaming god that some pantheons might depict the Allfather as. So Thor, tends to be this very almost altruistic, I'm a warrior and I will do what's right and blah, blah, blah. Whereas Thor from Norse mythology is a bit of a simpleton, a little dim-witted, and really just sort of a mass murderer. And again, when I do the God of War video, we'll show how that sort of leans it much further in that direction, like on the other end of the spectrum. So Marvel tends to be just a little bit sweeter all around for most of the time, but admittedly, like I said, I've not read the comics too much. I know there's some darker sides to it as well. And overall, I'm a comic book fan kind of guy. I just like cool stuff. So, seeing Thor fight the Hulk, whether or not that's Norse mythology or anything like that, it's just cool. All right. So that's kind of how I am. I'm not going to be like, this ruins Norse mythology and I hate it and it's terrible. I'm just not that kind of guy. John Dixon asked, in all the stories about Loki betraying the Aesir, how come it took them so long to bound or even kill Loki sooner? Right. So what happened was, apparently very early on, Odin discovered Loki. He found him. However, that's exactly done, but he noticed him. You know, we don't know anything about Loki's childhood or anything like that, his early years, but he must have been up to something that Odin found him. Or perhaps the other way, Loki sought out Odin. Either way, this led to eventually them swearing a blood oath. Their blood was mingled together, and this was apparently a sort of a thing in Norse culture, and so this meant that they were essentially blood brothers. Not literally brothers, but it was this oath. Oaths were very important in Norse culture and in Norse mythology. And so during the events of the Lokasenna, as I mentioned, when he insulted everyone, at first he was at the party and this servant was being praised for his work, and for some reason Loki didn't like this, so he killed the servant. They chased him off. He ran off into the woods. He returned to the feast, and he wanted to sit down. And of course, many of the gods were against this. Many of the gods did not care much for Loki, but he reminded Odin at that time that they had mingled their blood together. They had sworn this oath, and part of that was basically that no drink would be served to one of them that wasn't also served to the other. So basically, they would, at any given thing, they would be both treated with the same respect. So whether that's Loki in Asgard or, you know, Odin at some other, you know, situation where Loki had more respect or whatever, they would both be treated with the same amount of respect. And Odin had to acknowledge this, and he even told his son to get up and give his place to Loki, because that's how powerful these oaths were. So that's pretty much it. They threatened Loki many, many times, and Loki apparently believed their threats, because he would often, you know, fix the situation that they were threatening him about. But the reason they never did anything specifically to him was because of this oath, that he was meant to be treated pretty much with the same respect as Odin, for the most part. And this, of course, was finally broken when Loki caused the death of Balder and refused to weep for Balder so that Balder could return from Hel. And so this caused the gods, including Odin himself, to finally be, you know, finally say enough is enough. And they killed his son, they bound him with his entrails in the cave, and they put the snake there until Ragnarok. And this Odin knew was part of this sort of heralding of the coming Ragnarok, because they had broken this oath. Being an oath breaker in Norse culture, or at the very least Norse mythology, is equivalent of being a murderer. It's very serious. So it wasn't taken lightly either way. Madman asks, with the exception of Christianity, are there other connections with other mythologies, religions, and Norse mythology? Yeah, I mean, a lot of the Northern European mythologies, the Indo-European areas, ranging back to, you know, thousands of years ago, a lot of these share common similarities, and that's the fascinating thing. As you start to learn about all these different mythologies, you can see the similarities, you can see the connections. And you know, the Romans, when they encountered the Germanic peoples and that were worshiping Odin and Tyr and Thor and stuff, they basically were like, oh, they're actually worshiping Mars. You know, Thor is, they actually are worshiping Mars. They just call it by a different name, you know, and they're worshiping Jupiter, and they're worshiping, you know, things like that. They basically correlated all of the Norse gods to Roman counterparts, and the Norse people did the same thing. They said, oh, they're really worshiping Thor. They just call him Mars, you know. And so throughout history, you know, there's all these there's been all these similarities. And, you know, it goes back all the way to, you know, the pre-Norse mythology, when, you know, there was a lot of sun worshiping going on. And so, you know, so many different cultures worship the sun in different ways. And so that's one of the really fascinating parts of studying mythology, is that you do get to see all the similarities and connections. But with specifics, I'm not educated enough to really go into specifics. I apologize. Like, for, you know, ask me maybe at the end of when I cover like Egyptian mythology and Celtic mythology and things like that. Maybe I'll have enough knowledge in my head to really point out specific examples. But yes, the whole European range of religion and mythologies does share a lot of similarity. Jose Luis Gutierrez asks, is Thor and Loki actually brothers? So no, that's entirely a Marvel invention, as far as I understand. Loki and Odin share the blood brotherhood, the blood bond. Thor and Loki went on, you know, a few adventures together. You know, arguably Thor and Loki spent more time together than Odin and Loki, and so that could be where they got that from. And as we've kind of seen, Thor and Loki sort of make a better pair of characters, you know, sort of with sort of interactions and things like that, because they are very different. You know, Thor is, again, sort of dim-witted and muscle-bound and just smash everything, and Loki is as sly and silver-tongued as they get. So I understand why Marvel made sort of that difference and wanted to make that connection. It does make for a lot of interesting stories. But again, it's one of those things you see right here. What I'm saying is that Marvel's work on, you know, twisting the Norse mythologies has led people to believe that Thor and Loki are brothers and things like that. But good on you, Jose, for trying to actually learn the proper things. That's my point. Makia, could you maybe make a video on Merlin and Arthurian legend? That would actually be pretty interesting. I don't think it'll happen anytime soon for me to cover all the Arthurian legends, but I think that would actually make for a pretty interesting series for me personally. It's one of those things I don't know a whole lot about, but I know a little bit of tidbits here and there, and that would interest me enough to do a full series on it at some point. But again, I don't decide exactly what series I cover. That's all decided by the polls. I do occasionally decide to do individual videos that are separate on my own. I'll just be like, oh, that's a good idea for a video, such as the God of War video. But I think Arthurian legend would probably, all those stories would probably make up a whole series. Potentially an interesting one. CT7567, who is your favorite Norse god? I'm going to go with Loki. And it's kind of funny because I'm not entirely a huge fan of Loki from the Marvel adaptations. But Loki from Norse mythology is a very interesting figure to me. It's probably the most interesting figure, because you sort of expect him to just be evil. You know, you expect him to be like the most evil of the gods. And it's not really that way, because the other gods are not all exactly perfect, shining examples of good, but he's not exactly like cartoonishly evil himself either. And in a lot of ways, you know, he does want to be a part of the Aesir family. You know, he wants to be a part of Asgard. He wants to come to their feasts. He wants to, you know, he does want to help out. You know, when Thor's hammer gets stolen by the Jotnar, Thor wakes up and he immediately goes to Loki. And, you know, he's like, do you know where my hammer is? And Loki doesn't know. But he immediately jumps to it and goes and flies to Jotunheim to find out where exactly Hammer, you know, he immediately jumped to help him out. And he continue, he messes up. Yeah, he makes mistakes. He angers the gods. But he does try and rectify it as well. He doesn't just say, ha ha, you know, I got you. He does try and rectify a lot of the situations. The kidnapping of Idun, he does cause the whole problem pretty much in the first place, but he is responsible for rectifying it. And so you have this character that seemingly wants to be a part of this family and wants to be accepted. But he is also sort of ruined by his own nature, you know. He can't help it but become jealous and spiteful and hateful of a lot, you know, in a lot of these situations. And he can't help but just have this tongue that gets him into trouble. And he just has to say things that anger people. And there are plenty of people in the real world that are just like that. They just can't help but say things that anger people, even though, you know, they want to be generally a part of society. And then one day, you know, just things just go too far. And so Loki just, they're done with him. There is no rectifying this situation. And Loki knows it. He tries to hide. He tries to escape. But that he gets captured. He gets bound until Ragnarok. And at that point, he's done with the Aesir. He's not on their side anymore. So, boom, he's going to go on the other side and bring their downfall, because he is just naturally a spiteful character. And so you compare Loki and his development and his part in the tale, you compare him to somebody like Thor, who just doesn't have that same degree of change and interesting personality and things like that. And so overall, yeah, I would pick Loki. I mean, maybe the Thor comics do a better job of showing that sort of turmoil and development of Loki and things like that. It's possible. Again, there's so many of those comics. I probably should read them sometime. Ryan Ratchford, what do you think about the strange similarities between Norse gods and Jotuns compared to the Greek gods and Titans? Again, you know, like I said, there are a lot of similarities between all these different mythologies and religions. And if you learn about each one, you can sort of start to pinpoint and notice all these things. But the problem is that I don't know specifically enough about Greek to really comment on the whole gods and titans. My knowledge of Greek mythology comes from the God of War games. So I'm hoping that Greek mythology at some point wins a poll, because I'm very interested in learning about it. Which I could just go and learn about it on my own time, but I try to very focus on one specific subject at a time so I don't get confused. But yeah, like I said, there's a lot of similarities. Bugsy Squid Wielder asks, what are your thoughts on History Channel's hit show Vikings and their inclusion of Norse mythology? I have not seen it. I really don't watch much TV nowadays. Generally, I just watch YouTube videos. I'm kind of curious on how they showcase actual Vikings worship of Norse figures, because that's the thing that we really don't know that much about. Pretty much all our information on Norse mythology comes from after the Christianization of the Vikings. And we can find fragments and things like that. We can sort of make best guesses, but we don't know really how these gods were worshipped, what their specific beliefs were in regards to most of them, and things like that. So I would be curious, actually, to watch it and find out. Alucarads asks, do you believe that some myths are real? Do you also believe in magic? And are you religious? Okay, well, do I believe that some myths are real? I would say no. I would probably just say no. Again, I don't know all myths. I'm not an encyclopedia of all myths, so I can't really comment on everything. But, you know, like I said, as you learn about different mythologies and different cultures throughout history, you can start to see, again, the similarities, but also you understand why these peoples made up these myths or created these myths, how these myths came about. You know, these myths were created as part of storytelling, as part of explanations for things that they didn't understand. You know, their explanation of why the sun and the moon came across the sky was that there were two wolves chasing them constantly until the day of Ragnarok. Now, whether or not they actually believed that, or whether it was just a story, you know, that they created as part of just sitting around a fire at night, who knows? But I think a lot of myths, since we can sort of see the development of time, we have the benefit of our scope of knowledge and things like that. It's hard for me to really say that I could believe in any myth, like, you know, unicorns. I don't know. Just, again, that's me personally. I'm not, like, crapping on anybody that does believe in certain myths or anything like that. Do I believe in magic? As it stands, no. And mostly because I think our existence is pretty boring. That was my belief when I was a kid. I was just like, you know, that was pretty much how I rectified, like, you know, kids were scared of, like, werewolves and vampires, and as a kid I was like, there's no way that exists. Life is way too boring. Like, there's just no way something that cool exists. So magic I would throw in there, you know, even like telekinesis and remote viewing, psychic abilities, stuff like that. It's hard for me to be a believer in stuff like that. And so I guess that goes into the religious aspect as well. I was raised in a very devout Lutheran household. You know, I was told things like Halloween is the devil's birthday, and I guess it's just in my nature over the course of my lifetime to just sort of want to look into things on my own. I guess I've always been a bit of a skeptic, and so when you're a skeptic, your duty is to look into things, to research things, to gain an understanding as much as you can, to sort of decide for yourself. And so that's part of why I like doing the Exploring series so much, is I'm a fan of facts and I'm a fan of learning things. And so, yeah, it would be hard for someone like me to be overly religious. But I'm not, like, again, I'm not crapping on anybody that believes in myths, religion, whatever you want. That's on you. The question was about me. Windscar88, what happens after Ragnarok? Again, I sort of went into this in my Ragnarok video, but basically a new world arises from the ashes, I suppose, of the old cosmos. And it's really hard to say. The info on the aftermath of Ragnarok is much more sparse compared to Ragnarok itself, which is sort of interesting when you think about it. They focused more on the destruction rather than the rebirth. But basically, the new world would be green and beautiful and filled with animals. And it would be more beautiful than Midgard before it. There would be two humans that would survive the devastation by hiding out during Ragnarok. Just two. And they would repopulate the Earth. The surviving Aesir gods would rebuild Asgard. They would also go to a separate sort of heaven called Gimle, which is supposedly the most beautiful place in existence. Things would be merry, and all would be well in this new world. And then there's the mention to Nidhogg, potentially, you know, flying over the valley with corpses in his wings. But whether or not that's actually a part of the aftermath of Ragnarok, or it's the last thing she says, the seer says, before she, like, goes away. And so some think that she's just saying that to be like, Nidhogg is currently flying over the valley with corpses and wings. I gotta go. You know. So it, really, we don't know whether she was speaking in the present or speaking in the future as part of this vision still. I like to think it's part of the future vision. It's like, yeah, the new world is not just going to be perfectly happy. There's always going to be a little bit of trouble. But yeah, mostly we just have these little bits of information. And again, the problem is we don't know how much of that is influenced by Christianity. Because both creation and sort of the end of the world are really big parts of practically every religion, you know, birth and death and all that kind of stuff. And so it's very possible that our knowledge of Ragnarok and the rebirth and all that is twisted, even a little bit. You know, we just don't know what the Norse people specifically believed. McGee asked, could I make a video on Aragorn? I probably should. He is a very important character. I, for the most part, avoided doing any, like, individual character videos. Just because when I do a series, I try to summarize as much as I can and just try to condense and fit as many things into, like, each video as I can. But I know, like, if I was a Lord of the Rings channel, if I was a Tolkien channel, I would have to make a video on each character. I'd have to make a video on each event, you know, all sorts of, each location would get its own video because you have to fill in, you know, all this content. You're devoted to that, and that's how you get your views. I'm a very odd channel because I want to focus on so many different things. And so I keep bouncing. And that makes it hard to get a loyal following because people that are interested in Tolkien are not necessarily interested in Star Wars. It just so happens that I'm pretty much interested in everything. I'm the uber nerd. I think there will come a time, though. This is just hypothetical. There will come a time when I'm pretty much done uncovering every major series, but I want to keep making videos. And I think that will be the point when I start really delving back into all my old series and getting into the nitty gritty and doing specific character videos and stuff like that. So all I can say is probably not anytime soon for Aragorn, but in time, everything will happen. He also asked, okay, so all the races in the Lord of the Rings have the longest lifespan, and all the people raised it have the shortest lifespan, from longest to shortest. Oh, gosh. Yeah, I'm not an encyclopedia, so that's pretty tricky information off the top of my head. And I don't want to delve too much into Lord of the Rings here. I mean, the longest lifespan, you're looking at the Valar, the Maiar, elves, dwarves, humans, hobbits. I don't know if hobbits actually have a shorter lifespan than humans. I kind of want to think so, but I don't know. I honestly don't know. I'm sorry. He also has, what is my favorite myth? In all of myths, all myths. My goodness. I probably should have thought about this beforehand. All myths. There's a lot of them. The Binding of Fenrir is just a great story. The Binding of Fenrir is really great. I'm a big fan of that. Because the Binding of Fenrir is really a showcase that not all gods are really like great virtuous figures. You know, Norse mythology is generally pretty good about showing the differences between gods and giving gods human-like traits and things like that. The Binding of Fenrir is specifically great because you expect this great dread wolf that all these prophecies are about to really just be this monstrous figure. And the gods are right in binding him away and, you know, never, and just shutting him away and fearing him. But it's really an example of a self-fulfilling prophecy of, because the gods are so fearful and cruel to Fenrir, that's why he comes back and and kills the Allfather. So I'm a big fan of that. Of what I know of Greek mythology, I really like the story of Icarus. I know that's a pretty commonly quoted one because you know, there's a good lesson there. But I've always liked that since I was a kid. So as far as like specific myth tales, I think those are some good ones. Marcia Williams, what Asgard would be like if Loki stole the gods and goddesses' abilities, powers right before Ragnarok? Sort of a what-if scenario. I generally don't deal with those. I know a lot of channels like doing what-if videos on different situations. I generally don't like that just because I like to deal in facts so much. And, you know, that sort of what-if scenario is very, it's very Marvel. You know, it's very, like, it's just open to, like, the writer's interpretation. Yeah, if Loki had all the godly abilities before Ragnarok, it probably, honestly, would be the same outcome. Because the gods could not prevent their death. They could not prevent their destruction. I don't see why Loki exactly would do it. It's possible, I guess, if Loki had all combined godly powers, you know, the wisdom of Odin, the might of Thor, and the foresight, and all this kind of thing, it's possible he could defeat Surtur and prevent, you know, the cosmos from turning to ash. But he would still have to, I don't know. In the end, it's basically either the same thing happens and the world is born anew either way, or Loki becomes some sort of god figure, the singular deity, and that would probably be, I mean, I guess that would be interesting, but that would basically be like, it probably wouldn't be good for humanity either way, I think. And if you as a human was chosen to aid in Ragnarok, what would you do and why? If I was chosen to aid in Ragnarok, that would mean I'd be one of the Einherjar. Most likely. So I would be in the fight against the Jotnar. And I'd probably die immediately. I don't know what else I could provide. I would be cannon fodder. Let's see here. Not too many more. FB guy asked, do you have an idea for a modern story involving Norse mythology? So, I guess if I was going to pitch a story, show, or whatever, that involved heavily on Norse mythology. Either way, it would not be close. It would not be like an exact adaptation of Norse mythology, just because that's not what I would pick to do if I was going to make like a 6-season show. You could just do like a mini series that adapts all the stories from Norse mythology, but if I was going to do like a lengthy show, like a Game of Thrones show or something, it would be interesting to have the various deities. Again, I think the Marvel influence is very big. I think a lot of people are familiar with Thor and things like that from Marvel Comics and the Marvel movies. And so I think it would be interesting to showcase the gods as a little bit grittier and a little bit less godly in the sense of just, you know, knight in shining armor and things like that and always good and virtuous. You know, it'd be interesting to showcase an Odin that is a little bit more underhanded, is willing to do whatever it takes to get more wisdom, is willing to pluck out his eye and hang himself just in the name of wisdom. You know, showcase a Thor that is a little bit of a mass murderer, is a little bit unstable, and, you know, of course there would have to be some cool action sequences and things like that. Showcase the Jotnar as a little bit more sympathetic and a little bit not of just some giant frost trolls, but as pretty much just another tribe that are not as cohesive as the Aesir, and that's really sort of their downfall. They're not, the Jotnar are not really cohesive until Ragnarok, when they all band together. You know, until then, they're all over the place. So some of these things are done in the new God of War game, but the problem is they go too far in every direction. So just sort of a grittier take, a grittier showcase of Norse mythology and the Norse tales, where you're not exactly sure if there are any heroes, you know, if there are any true godly figures. That would be pretty interesting. And I know there's a show and a book series and things like that, American Gods, that has like different deities that are in like the modern day and aren't all shining. I haven't watched the show. I really should. But yeah, just something that would really put itself into popular culture as a different take from what Marvel has done. Because I think Marvel is a pretty big influence. Do I believe the end of Ragnarok is what inspired the beginning of the Old Testament and the Bible? It ends with two humans who are to repopulate the world and one god, Baldur, I believe, ready to rule as the ruler of the world. Baldur does come back after Ragnarok, but he also comes back with Hodur, his brother, his blind brother who killed him, who was murdered or killed for his crime. Magni and Modi, Thor's sons, are there. Hainir is there. I think there might be a couple other. I think a couple of Odin's sons are there as well. So there's a number of Aesir gods that survive Ragnarok and repopulate Asgard. And as for the two humans who are to repopulate the world, that actually is how creation sort of starts. You know, the world is first populated in Norse mythology because of two humans. Again, we just don't know how much influence Christianity had on these different myths and what they actually believed. But I would say there's probably enough differences there, especially if you take into account their creation myth, that I think we can sort of see the forest through the trees as far as the what the Norse believed, but who knows really. What do we got? Just a few more here. What did the gods think of humanity? Humanity, it's kind of funny. Humanity is almost never really mentioned by the Norse gods. They are very, you know, some pantheons, some mythologies, you have the deities very often directly influencing man's affairs. They often go down there and interact with them. That does not happen that much in Norse. They are generally indifferent to them. Heimdall, of course, supposedly went down there and slept with a bunch of couples, and supposedly that started the class system of humanity. Odin would often travel amongst humanity in disguise. That is a very common thing that he did, to the point of he was probably in Midgard and other places more often than he was in Asgard. And I'm trying to remember a specific reference that I remember about Odin traveling among people. I think he would often like test them in different ways to see if they were, you know, worthy or something like that. But, you know, the overall thing is, these are not kind, loving gods that loved their creation and they loved humanity. They protected humanity. You know, they built a wall around Midgard to protect them from the Odinar. They didn't want humanity to die. But that really could just be, again, sort of Odin's selfishness. You know, a big part of it is him wanting the finest warriors to come to Valhalla to fight for him during Ragnarok. And so a lot of things can be based around that. And so much of Norse mythology is based around Odin's will to change, his will to change the future and influence the future and try and prevent his death and his family's deaths and things like that. So I wouldn't say exactly that the Norse gods thought of humans as just a resource or as a tool or something like that. But that's an interesting part of Norse mythology, is that they didn't just, you know, love humanity and want to protect them to the end of days and things like that. The Norse people were not as fanciful as that, apparently, to just think in that way. It was a harsher belief. LeBourn asks an opinion about neopaganism. I think I sort of talked about that with myths and religion and things like that. I'm not against anybody believing in anything they want. I think it's just from sort of an outside perspective, it's sort of fascinating, really. We sort of, you know, history sort of has this pendulum effect of switching between idealism and realism and sort of ages of enlightenment and things like that. And so we seem to be swinging towards more of a decline in religious belief overall. But then, you know, I guess it could just be that I hear about all these sort of things, certain, you know, neo-paganism, people believing in Roman gods and Greek gods, Norse gods, Celtic gods, and that's their religious belief, and they follow it. So it could just be I'm hearing about it more often nowadays. But it's sort of fascinating, you know, to see this decline in religion overall, but then you see these people that are very devout worshippers of Odin. And I don't want to go into it too much, really, because it's sort of a sensitive topic. But it's like, you know, belief is a curious thing overall. Because it's a very personal thing. And it can really, you know, easily shape a person's life and their personality and their actions and things like that. But you have, say, you know, the Christian God that is very, it's very positive overall. It depends on what denomination and things you are, I suppose, but overall very positive. Again, I was raised Lutheran, so we didn't believe in, like, you know, you had to do good things or anything like that. It was just, you know, you believe in God, you believe in Jesus Christ, you go to heaven and everything's great, and if not, you go to hell and it's horrible. So it's pretty simple stuff. But, you know, you have belief in Odin. I feel like that's a little bit more complicated. Because it's like, nowadays, unless you die, if you believe in Odin, you believe in Norse mythology, I mean, are you planning on dying gloriously in combat? Because that was really what most Norse people wanted. That's why they believed that they were taken to Valhalla. And they would feast and fight and serve Odin in during Ragnarok. That was their aspiration. And so they were a very warfaring people. And so you wanted to die in combat, because if you didn't die in combat, well, you just went to hell. And hell is not as it's often depicted in popular culture. Again, it was sort of just another stage of life, but from what I understand, if you were a warrior, if you were worshiping Odin, things like that, you aspired to die in combat, and you were chosen by the Valkyries. I don't know how that really works in today's culture, in today's world. I don't know how many people I want to aspire to die gloriously in combat. So it's just kind of fascinating to me. Again, I'm not going to crap on anything, but it's a fascinating topic that really, I'm not knowledgeable enough now about to really discuss it. Jan Plua? Plua? What are your starting points regarding sources? This is the big thing that I was really concerned with when I first started Norse mythology, because I was like, I didn't know anything about Norse mythology, so I was like, there's got to be, you know, all these books and all these manuscripts and texts and all these things I have to read. I don't even know where to begin. In the end, it's not that complicated, though, because, again, we just don't know that much. We don't have that many. We don't have that many primary sources. So really, it comes down to two. And there are a lot of other things you can read and research, but there are later texts that you can study from all parts of Northern Europe and things like that. But our earliest stuff that we really can concretely go off of, for the most part, are two books here. We have the Poetic Edda. The Poetic Edda. So this is translated by Jackson Crawford. This is from the 13th century. This is an Icelandic collection, pretty much, of different poems. So it's basically a gathering of all these different pieces of poetry that we could find were written after Christianity took over Iceland and the Viking Age was pretty much done. It's basically a gathering of culture, you know. It's a gathering of poetry related to Norse mythology in an effort to maintain the culture despite Christianity taking over as the main religion. So when these poems were written, it was basically like people did not actually believe in Odin and Thor openly, at the very least. Like, that was done. That's been done for like a couple hundred years by the time this was written and these poems were written. But it's an important book because this is like the raw poetry. So you can read these to better understand the prose Edda written by Snorri Sturluson, also around the 13th century. And this is less poetry. This is more just a, this is more just prose, you know, just regular text and stories that Snorri wrote down. Snorri was an Icelandic chieftain, not a particularly good one from what I understand, but his life's work apparently was to, you know, he saw that the his people's culture was fading away, that it was being just replaced and time was moving on and things like that. And so he wanted to take all these poems, you know, from texts like this. He didn't have a book like this, but he was taking all these stories and he wanted to write them down for future generations in a way that was easily understandable. But again, Snorri was a Christian himself. And so the prose Edda, like, if you're not big on poetry and you just want a shorter book to just read about stories, the prose Edda is your better bet. Because the poetic Edda is a lot of poetry, which can be a turnoff. But you have to keep in mind for both things that we don't know exactly if this is what Norse people believed, because there are clear, I mean, even just me reading this, you can see the clear references to Christianity. You can see how things changed. Even very early on, you can definitely see, like, prologue. The first sentence of this book, the Prose Edda, is, in the beginning, Almighty God created heaven and earth and all that pertains to them. So you can, you know, it wears the Christian influence on its sleeve, and it's sort of, it tries to sort of rectify the Norse myths with the Christian worldview by saying that, oh, you know, Odin and Thor, these were actually just people. These were great Norse people that did these certain events and things like that. That's sort of how the beginning of the book and the end of the book sort of goes into these things. But a lot of it does showcase the actual stories themselves, and it's a decent read. And it references specifically a lot of poems that we have written down and translated in the Poetic Edda. But it also references poems that we don't have. So it'll reference a poem and reference an event that we don't know about. We have no knowledge of, we have no text related to it. So Snorri knew things, obviously, that we don't know. And so instead of writing down everything, he just merely made reference to it. So that's the whole point, is it's very fragmented and we don't know a lot about it. If you're not interested in reading old Icelandic texts from back in the day, I really recommend, just as an introductory, if you just want to read through all the stories, Norse Mythology by Neil Gaiman. It's pretty short. This is only 250 some pages with pretty large text, and it's really just, it's sort of just a retelling in a lot of ways of the stories. So he puts in dialogue and you know, certain characterizations that are not in the actual old text. But it's probably the most entertaining to read of these three. At least it was for me. So as an introductory book, it's really fantastic to just show all the stories and tell all the stories in an entertaining way. So that's why for all the videos in the Norse series that I did, I included a Amazon referral link to this book. So if you want to buy this, feel free to use my referral link. That helps me out a little bit. All right, so we went over an hour. I know I didn't get to everything. That's how it works. I think we got to most things. That's just how it goes. Here's a good one. What's your absolute favorite exploring video I've made? That's a good one. There's really I'd say there's three that I really just enjoyed working on the most. The first one was Middle-earth, the Tale of Beren and Lúthien. I had never heard the story before I worked on that video. That was really new to me. And it was just such a perfect, self-contained, exciting story that could be made into a movie. And I just thought, you know, the artwork is really nice. It's just really a pleasant story. For some reason, I just really liked that video. The second one was the Akavir video for Elder Scrolls. That's such a cool aspect of the Elder Scrolls universe, of Tamriel, I've already forgotten what the world is called, but of the Elder Scrolls universe, the whole Akavir continent, the different species there, the different civilizations, really interesting. And then since there's not a whole lot of artwork for that, I just got to grab all sorts of gorgeous, just generic artwork of different like locations and stuff like that. And I mean, I'm a huge fan of like digital artwork of landscapes, fantasy landscapes and things like that. So whenever I get to just bust out some just generic stuff like that, I don't have to find like black and white, you know, old scribbles of certain events and stuff like that. When I just go hog wild with generic artwork, that I can just go as beautiful as I want. The Dreamlands video for Cthulhu Mythos was also kind of like that. That one was a really fun one to work on. And then finally, the Cthulhu Mythos and Bloodborne video was... it was a massive project. I had no idea how I was going to do that video, how it was going to turn out. But playing through Bloodborne like obsessively for a week to get all the footage and just... going through all these references and connections in my head and putting it all together, that was a lot of fun. And yeah, the Teletubbies video was also pretty fun. But pretty much every video I work on, almost every video I work on, I have no idea how it's going to come together. And then halfway through it, I'm just like, oh yeah, okay, this could work. I'm always a little worried whenever I start a new video. It's like, do I even know what I'm talking about? I'm just going to mess this all up. What do I know? What do I know about anything? I'm generally pretty insecure, but then about halfway through, I'm like, oh yeah, my brain knows what it's doing. And so every video is usually pretty fun to work on. Except the timeline of Tamriel for the first Elder Scrolls video I did. That one was not fun to work on because I didn't know any of that, and just walking into the timeline of Tamriel from like an outside perspective was just mind-blowing, because there's just so many events, so many dates and names. It's just such a massive timeline. And then you have like dragon breaks, and I didn't know what dragon breaks were at the time, and it was just like, I have no idea how I finished that video. But anyways, that's gonna wrap us up for today. I hope I've provided some entertainment, maybe some educational value. Thanks to everyone who submitted questions, whether they got answered or not, I apologize. Thanks to everyone for watching this. Thanks to everyone for watching the Norse mythology series in general. Overall, that was one of my favorite series to work on. Each video was really interesting. I got to learn a lot. It's really one of the best parts of doing this channel. So thanks to you guys. And we will move on with a new series very soon. So keep exploring.